Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, February 2, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, School Districts Deplete Reserves to Save Programs. Inequitable Funding Adds to Struggles in Poorer Areas Needing State Aid, by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer, Decatur. The state of Illinois owes the Decatur School District $1.5 million from fiscal year 2016 and $2 million so far for 2017. Most of that money was targeted for reimbursements for special education, transportation, and early childhood programs. They're pretty good about paying the general state aid on time, said Todd Cavolt, Chief Operational Officer for Decatur Schools. But it's all of the other required programs, like transportation, that they're slow about. That's just one district out of 859 in the state. Cavolt's concern is that if the legislators ever get a budget pulled together, the state can't afford to fund education at the promised levels. In April, when the state is due to settle up, he said he's afraid officials will scale back the amounts after districts have already spent the funds. It's an indication of a bigger problem that just hasn't burst yet, Cavolt said. Decatur schools began the fiscal year with a surplus of $2 million, Cavolt said, which kept the district from having to consider budget cuts for the first time in 10 years. If state funds come through as promised, that money would replenish the reserve fund. Currently, it behooves school districts to build up cash reserves when feasible in order to have a rainy day fund, he said. Unfortunately, it seems to rain a lot in Illinois. During the bleak years, districts tend to spend down these cash reserves. Funding of public education in Illinois is inherently inequitable, said Senator Andy Menar on Wednesday, during a conference call about the governor's School Funding Reform Commission. The commission just concluded its work and is issuing a report on its findings. Among those, Menar said, is that the current school funding formula doesn't account for different needs in different districts. The commission recommended that we have to account for the unique needs of every district and account for the fact that it takes more to educate a child living in poverty to get the same outcome as a child that doesn't live in poverty, Menar said. That change alone, if we can accomplish it, will take a tremendous bite out of the inequities. The commission's report must now be turned into a bill and passed, Menar said, and the hope is that it will be passed this spring, in time to affect funding for education in the 2017-18 school year. Because of the way schools are funded in Illinois, districts with higher property values or equalized assessed valuation depend less on state money. If the state doesn't come through as promised, or if funding is cut, a property tax-rich district doesn't feel the pinch and services to students aren't affected. Districts such as Bloomington, with its $832 million in equalized assessed valuation, are better situated to weather a shortfall than poorer districts such as Decatur, with its $704 million in equalized assessed valuation as of 2014. The Illinois State Board of Education says the minimum amount required to educate each child in the state is $6,119 per year, an amount known as the foundation level. Illinois law requires the state to provide school districts with the difference between that amount and the district's own wealth as calculated by an equalization formula. The state also provides a supplemental low-income grant or poverty grant that is based on the district's population of low-income students. Bloomington's poverty grant was $4.1 million for the 2016-17 school year, while Decatur's was $21.1 million. Small districts, like Mattoon, struggle even more. Mattoon's equalized assessed valuation for the 2016-17 school year was calculated at $310 million, with $1.4 million subtracted for enterprise zones, and the district's property grant was $2.7 million. However, for 11 of the last 15 years, the state has not fully funded schools, sending districts as much as 10% less than the full amount. In a wealthy district with little poverty, that could be a fraction of the overall revenue, yet it might cut significantly into a less wealthy district's budget. At Central A&M, for example, the $704,000 payments for special education and transportation that have yet to be paid amount to 10% of the district budget, said Superintendent Deanne Heck. The less wealthy districts that rely more on state funding are the ones more at risk, Kovalt said. If a wealthy district, come March, doesn't get the money, they can say, well, I wasn't expecting $3.5 million anyway. I was expecting a minimal amount. It's not as dramatic to a wealthy district. The Education Funding Advisory Board has submitted recommendations to the General Assembly and Governor to increase the foundation level to $9,204, beginning with fiscal year 2018 on July 1st. This recommended increase would require $4.6 billion in additional funds for education for fiscal year 2018, almost double the current appropriation. The last time the state adopted the Education Funding Advisory Board's recommendation was 2002. The current foundation level of $6,119 has remained the same since 2010. Increasing funding for basic education in Illinois will be a challenge, but it is a challenge we ask every policymaker and citizen to embrace, said the board's chairwoman, Sylvia Puente. The children of Illinois deserve no less. We ask our policymakers to note that in each of the years that the state has failed to meet its obligations, school districts must continue to meet all of the statutory requirements imposed upon them. This situation should not be allowed to continue. Budget stalemate leaves some universities running on fumes. Normal. Public community college and university officials in Illinois are walking a tightrope, trying to emphasize the harm being done by the ongoing state budget stalemate without scaring off potential students and making matters worse. As it is, Illinois is second only to New Jersey in exporting its high school graduates to out-of-state universities. Despite attempts by colleges and universities to calm the fears of parents and students about financial aid and program offerings, a sense of nervousness prevails, and that concern extends to their own employees. Illinois State University is on stronger financial footing than others in Illinois, but uncertainty is still taking its toll. We don't know what the future holds for us, said ISU President Larry Dietz. That anxiety is created throughout the whole campus. Spring semester started without a state budget in place for the second year in a row. People are tired of hearing, "We're trying." They've been trying for 2 years, said Dietz. It's unfathomable that we don't have a budget. ISU sophomore Abby Mustreed, a nursing student from Bloomington, said it's time for state officials to show cooperation and some compromise, work together. Tom Cross, chairman of the Illinois Board of Higher Education, said he is cautiously optimistic that a budget agreement will be reached soon, and I think we'll have a pretty good recovery. But he admits that the impasse has made retention and recruitment of faculty and staff a challenge. Southern Illinois University President Randy Dunn said the budget uncertainty has created a crisis of confidence that caused students to go elsewhere. According to data from the Illinois State Board of Education, of the 2015 high school graduates who moved on to a four-year college, 45%, 18,165 went out of state to attend college. Of course, Illinois schools also attract students from other states. But Dietz said there was a net loss of 16,000 students to out-of-state schools. That's a loss of revenue from those students, and, Dietz said, more importantly, we're losing their intellectual brain power. Students who attend an out-of-state university or college also are less likely to return to Illinois after graduation, according to Dietz. Although public universities have been standing behind grants awarded to students through the state's monetary award program and waiting for payment from Illinois, students are concerned. "I get a MAP grant," said ISU freshman Anthony Clark. "If that were to go, I would have to go." The economics major from Bloomington noted, "I'm not the only one banking on it. A lot of us are relying on it for our future." Karis Crandall, a freshman in creative writing from Peoria, said, "College is very expensive, and she is a little alarmed that a budget agreement hasn't been reached." "Higher education is an important route out of poverty," said Crandall. ISU and the University of Illinois saw enrollment go up last fall. Others weren't so fortunate. Western Illinois University saw its full-time equivalent enrollment drop from 9,560 in the fall of 2015 to 8,934 last fall, a decline of about 6.5%. Matt Bierman, WIU's interim vice president for administrative services and budget director, said, "It's become more and more difficult to do long-range planning without a state budget in place." Western received $8.4 million in emergency funding in a measure that also provided $5.6 million to Eastern Illinois University and $3 million to Chicago State University. Bierman said, "From a cash flow standpoint, WIU has enough to get through the spring semester. Our students should not be concerned. Our community should not be so concerned," said Bierman. Western laid off more than 100 people for the summer, but Bierman said everyone who was laid off, who wanted to come back, was able to come back. Meanwhile, fall enrollment at Eastern fell 13% to 7,415, and nearly 200 civil service employees were laid off in March. In his State of the University address in September, EIU President David Glassman said, "The events of the past year have shaken the level of trust between the state, their public colleges and universities, and the citizens of Illinois." Paul McCann, EIU Vice President for Business Affairs, said Eastern is now relying on tuition and fees money from students, and he does not see that ending in time soon. "Do I want lawmakers to give us something? Sure," McCann said. "Am I confident that we are going to get it? No." As of December 31st, Eastern's cash balance is about $52.6 million. "We are a state agency. We need a state appropriation," McCann said. "It is as simple as that. We believe we are a good steward of state money and have done everything that we possibly can do to earn that trust and to provide the excellent education we provide to the students." McCann said Eastern, even amid these financial struggles, will be fine. "We will be okay," McCann said. "Does that mean the state doesn't need to give us an appropriation?" "No, we still need an appropriation. But we will make it through the semester, and we will make it to the summer and next fall." Even at schools that have avoided layoffs, such as Illinois State, vacant positions have been eliminated or left open. Dunn said SIU has developed scenarios allowing us to get through the fiscal year even without a state appropriation. But, he added, "we really are running on fumes to get to that point." Fall enrollment at SIU Carbondale fell to under 16,000, a 7.6% drop from the previous fall, and its lowest point since 1965. Community colleges also are feeling the pain. In January, Richland Community College in Decatur announced it was eliminating several positions, including Vice President of Economic Development and Innovative Workforce Solutions, Chief of Staff, and Director of Human Resources. Richland has seen its enrollment drop by 13% in the last 6 years. At the same time, state funds have declined 12%. Its board decided at the end of last year to approve a budget that relied solely on tuition and local tax dollars due to the uncertainty of receiving any state money. With how the state has been in recent years, we just cannot rely on them to provide the funds they have promised to us in the past, said Greg Florian, Richland's Vice President of Finance and Administration. Richland did not qualify for any of the $3 million in emergency funding doled out to financially troubled community college districts, including Lakeland College. Lakeland College has needed to make cuts to its workforce and operating budget due to its state funding shrinking and being delayed because of the budget impasse. Lakeland President Josh Bullock said the college cut approximately $5.7 million out of its annual budget this year, including cutting the operating budgets for all departments by 25%. He said the college collaborated with the faculty union on a salary and benefits freeze this year as well. In addition, Bullock said Lakeland has eliminated approximately 12 positions and is leaving 9 to 11 vacant positions unfilled. He said Lakeland has taken these cost-cutting measures while working with faculty and staff to ensure that academic programs and student services are not affected. Our goal really was to insulate students as much as possible from the state budget impasse, and I think we have done that, Bullock said. The downside is that in this type of an environment, you can't continue to ask 120% of people into perpetuity. They are willing to go the extra mile right now, but it is a lot of additional work and stress on staff. Cross said, just like businesses hit with an economic downturn, colleges and universities need to reorganize, reprioritize, and think differently. Cross said, I don't want to minimize how important it is to have a budget, but he thinks the schools will emerge strong, adding, I hope we see this as a blip. Decatur Township's new cemetery board is a go with new trustees, by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer, Decatur. The newest version of the Decatur Township Cemetery Board is alive. A month after the township's Board of Trustees surprisingly approved the recreation of the board that supervises the township's three cemeteries, the board went ahead at its Wednesday night meeting and appointed John Funk, Conchetta Geis, and Bruce Pillsbury to serve as trustees on the newly formed cemetery board. A special meeting will be held in the coming weeks to go over exact duties and powers of the cemetery board. But as of now, the board official has jurisdiction over the cemeteries, which includes Greenwood Cemetery. Wednesday night saw the board also to clarify comments made by Supervisor Lisa Stanley after last month's meeting that left the status of current cemetery director Lynn Dixon's in question. Stanley said that Dixon, who has overseen the three cemeteries since August 2014, would report directly to the cemetery board, who would pass information on to the full board. Dixon welcomed the new cemetery board trustees after the vote and hoped it would lead to good things for Greenwood. I think this will allow for improved communication, Dixon said, and communication is important. Funk was the lone appointee to be approved unanimously, as Geis and Pillsbury were both approved by a 3-2 vote. Stanley and trustees Michael Smith and Tom Grenius voted yes, while trustees Amy Roof and Debbie Sheets voted no. Board members were pleased with Funk's background, which includes work in finances and in real estate. Pillsbury served on the previous cemetery board before it was dissolved in 2014, and Greenius said he supported having someone with some experience on the new board. But Sheets reiterated that the reason they dissolved the board while Pillsbury was on it was due to unsatisfactory work. "I think we need a new start if we're going to bring back this board," Sheets said. Guise's management and financial work with the city of Decatur was appealing for the board, Stanley said. Cemetery board trustees will serve 6-year terms and be paid $50 per meeting. The cemetery board and control of the cemeteries has been a long-time point of contention for Decatur Township. There have been several occasions over the past few decades of the township board dissolving or stripping authority from the cemetery board before restoring it several years later. The most recent prior version of the cemetery board was dissolved in April 2014. Area lawmakers file legislation to ensure state worker pay, by Chris Lusvardi, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Some state lawmakers took steps Wednesday in an effort to ensure state workers continue to get paid through the budget impasse. With a possible shutdown of state services looming, State Representative Sue Shearer, Democrat of Decatur, filed legislation that she said would keep Illinois government functioning. Attorney General Lisa Madigan last week filed a lawsuit in St. Clair County Circuit Court that would keep employees from receiving paychecks unless a budget agreement can be reached. The lawsuit would halt the pay of state workers as of February 28th, putting pressure on state leaders to come to an agreement. Hardworking families are already hurting because of the ongoing budget impasse, and a shutdown of state government would cause even more severe, lasting damage, Shearer said. "I care about the residents of my district, many of whom are state employees, which is why I am introducing this measure to ensure workers get paid and state services continue to be delivered." Shearer's legislation is House Bill 1798, which would put legislative appropriation in place to pay state employees. Shearer's district includes Macon County and extends into Christian and Sangamon counties, which are heavily populated with state workers. She said a dire need exists for a resolution to the budget impasse to provide stability to working families as well as Illinois' most vulnerable residents. "It terrifies me to think about what will happen to the elderly, the disabled, and our entire community if the state shuts down," Shearer said. "There are people whose lives literally depend on their access to state services. In addition to the thousands of workers whose families depend on their paycheck to pay bills and put food on the table." Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and the Democrat-controlled legislature has been unable to reach a long-standing spending agreement as the state has been without a complete budget since July 2015. A stopgap spending plan that funded state operations from July through December didn't include pay for state workers of an earlier court order. "We need a budget, not games, and I implore the governor and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle to work together to resolve this situation as quickly as possible," Shearer said. In a separate piece of legislation, State Representative Avery Bourne, Republican from Raymond, proposed actions that continue appropriations that would guarantee payment during the stalemate. Bourne's measure is House Bill 1787. State lawmakers could consider the measures when they return to work in Springfield next week. Local briefs. Shot up ceiling. A Decatur man who allegedly told police he had shot up his own living room ceiling during a New Year's Eve party was arrested Saturday and booked on multiple weapon and illegal drug charges. Sworn statements said officers had pulled the 19-year-old suspect's car over Saturday afternoon and found cannabis and some live ammunition. After a warrant was obtained, police searched the suspect's house in the 1200 block of North Jordan Street and seized a stolen AR-15 rifle and found a .380 semi-automatic handgun tucked underneath his mattress. Detectives also discovered 9 packages of cannabis in his bedroom that together weighed 129 grams. Officers also noticed multiple bullet holes in the ceiling of the main floor and said the suspect told them he had a party celebrating New Year's Eve and admitted discharging the handgun approximately 20 times into the ceiling while other people were present. He was jailed on charges of possession of cannabis with intent to deliver, possession of a stolen firearm, reckless discharge of a firearm, and having no firearm owner's identification card. Decatur, Energy Help. Appointments for the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program will be made starting at 7 a.m. Friday, February 3rd, at the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary Anderson Plaza. February is set aside for all eligible low-income households, with a priority given to people who are disconnected or who have received a disconnect notice. Applicants must live in Macon County. Applicants are asked to park in the lot across the street from the Civic Center. Appointments will also be made by telephone starting at 8:30 a.m. by calling 217-428-2193. No calls will be taken at the Civic Center. The program is administered by Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corp. Appointments will be issued on a first-come, first-served basis until all slots are filled. Business briefs. Peoria uncertainty. Caterpillar Inc.'s plans to relocate its global headquarters to the Chicago area by the end of the year have made downtown Peoria's future development uncertain. Caterpillar unveiled plans in 2015 to build its new campus across the street from the current headquarters after demolishing a Chase Bank building, which the company acquired in 2012. The project had the potential to be included in a downtown transformation, which has begun with infrastructure improvements and residential additions. Downtown Advisory Commission Chairman Mark Misselhorn says the status of an entire downtown block is now in question. He says Caterpillar's move opens the Chase building to redevelopment instead of demolition. No bacon worries. Pork industry experts say U.S. consumers shouldn't worry about a bacon shortage. The reassurance comes amid news that demand for bacon depleted frozen pork belly supplies in the U.S. to a record low for December. Pork bellies are the cut of the hog farm, of the hog from which bacon is derived. But the industry is confident it can boost hog production enough to avoid any serious shortages. Bottom line, a pound of bacon may cost a little more as winter wears on, but prices should stabilize by summer. Rush card reimbursement. Thousands of consumers who were blocked from using their own money via their rush cards, a brand of prepaid debit and credit cards, will be awarded $10 million in restitution under an agreement announced Wednesday. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau said MasterCard and Rush Card company Unirush must pay the money to tens of thousands of its customers who were hit by the card's much-publicized failures in late 2015. Customers will not need to take action. Some consumers will receive more money than others, depending on how they were harmed. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, February 2nd, 2017. Please stay tuned.